Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one, that's one, enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. We're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And let me tell you, UCC, Dodd-Frank 2010, they can keep your money. And there's people that are getting aware of this now. I felt I was the lone voice out there for a long time, but people are starting to publish stuff about this. Noble Gold can fix all of these threats to your financial security. Not going to get into how. All you got to do is call them. No pressure. They're trained not to pressure you. Call 877-646-5347. 877-646-5347. And by the way, I've been a customer of Noble Gold for 8 years. Our guest, we're lucky to have him back for the third time on the Common Sense Show because he's got so much great stuff, particularly on China, is Joshua Philip. He's the host of Crossroads. And it's a news analysis program on Epoch TV, of which I am a subscriber. He spearheaded the first lab leak origins with regard to COVID back in 2020. And so he was one of the original voices in the wilderness and survived to tell about it. You know, we know how what happened to the careers of some of our colleagues. He's garnered on his documentary over 75 million views, been a guest on one of our favorites, Tucker Carlson, who you know my feelings about Tucker. And of course, he's been around the bend on many, many of the mainstream and alternative media shows. And he's here to talk to us about Chinese, well, my term, infiltration, and how they're dominating or attempting to dominate at every turn in American society. And they started doing this, my research, even before they had really good military prowess. Joshua, welcome to the show. And I think this is so timely because with China being in a pretty high level of chaos right now internally, they certainly aren't stopping their assault on the United States, are they?
Oh, not at all. So this is something that needs to be clarified because some people might say, well, isn't China having trouble internally? Isn't their economy struggling? Why are we still having these problems with them? So first off, for the Chinese Communist Party, the military budget is not really impacted by the, you know, economic stress. They'll fund that as the first priority above anything. You know, they'll starve half the country to maintain their military budget. So, you know, for them, that's priority one. It has not changed despite everything. No matter the struggles, no matter the, you know, the real estate crisis they have with Evergrande, no matter the banking crisis, no matter the manufacturing crisis, military is still huge, huge for them. The other side, people might question, what about Xi Jinping? Isn't he having these weird power struggles inside? Hasn't he lost some power? I would actually say the Chinese Communist Party in some ways is more dangerous when it's unstable.
I agree.
Because you run the risk of a leader. Let's put it this way. Xi Jinping in particular has lost some control over the military. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're supreme dictator of a communist party and, you know, military officers and maybe a handful of people are giving you trouble, how do you easily get rid of them? Well, I'd say you start a war and you send them to the front lines and make sure they die first. So, you know, for the CCP, despite these problems externally, I'd say they're more dangerous right now.
I would agree. They're like, I've made an analogy to a wounded and cornered animal. And I think we're anticipating they may do something because we just put thousands of Marines into Luzon. And we know the Philippines are having major problems with their privateers with regard to fishing and shipping. The Chinese are interdicting and ramming their vessels. And in fact, I believe the Philippines have even gone to the UN over this. And yeah. So here's what I am wondering, and I'm going to digress just for a second. I'm not so sure that Taiwan is going to be their number one objective or their first objective. I'm wondering now, I narrowed it down. I said Vietnam or the Philippines, and I think it could be the Philippines.
Well, you know, the Philippines are an easier target because they're not fully on board with the United States. I mean, you could say the same thing about Vietnam, but what the CCP really does not want is a land war. They don't want a land war if they can help it. If they can keep it naval, if they can keep it kind of just, you know, territorial disputes, they'll go for it. But, you know, the weird thing with China, with the Chinese regime, it can have full-scale conflicts with the Philippines. It can be ramming boats. They can have, you know, constant like back and forth. On the political side, they can have all kinds of diplomatic problems, but on the business side, nothing changes. On the business side, they keep the door wide open. On the business side, they keep all the same projects in place. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this weird, like, schizophrenic policy. Even in the United States, we see them as a political threat, an economic threat, a spy threat, you know, national security threat. But the door is wide open on trade, although it is changing a little bit with tariffs, but it's still pretty wide open.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there, and I totally agree. The military is the number one priority, and they go above and beyond what, like, say, President Trump would do, depending on how it would impact the United States citizens. And you're right, they're totally blind to domestic problems with the military, because I see no change in their aggression tactics. Just based on what you're seeing, though, before we get into their institutional infiltration in the United States, I'm curious as to why you think that they want to avoid all land battles, since they would have such a numerical superiority.
Well, let me explain that a bit more. Then, yeah, so they wouldn't mind a land battle in Taiwan. They might not. Now I think of it, they might not want a land battle in. They might not care about a land battle in Philippines, but they would not want a land battle with Vietnam or a nearby country. And one of the reasons for this is because inside China, they really lack logistics. Logistics is one of their big shortfalls. If they were to move troops, for example, from the east of China to the west of China, it's like they have a few rail lines for it. They don't have strong infrastructure in place for this. I mean, it would be easily destroyed. And they risk also the point, you know, whereas America, we're kind of built to fight two wars, you know, East Coast and West Coast, right?
Right.
They don't really have that. So for them, a land battle on their border or within China would be a very risky endeavor.
Okay.
Because their big concern wouldn't so much be to, you know, fighting one country. Their big concern would be, what if another country invades while the military is gone from this other place? They're not set up for it.
Yeah, they couldn't do the proverbial two-front war. And I hear that, too, from people I know inside the military. They really have a hard time projecting military power beyond a local regional level, and they're not very efficient. I've heard the same thing. Okay, well, let's look inside the United States. I mean, I've come across stories where we have Chinese student groups on virtually every major university, and they're not interdicted, yet they carry out CCP propaganda on campus. How aware of you are you of that?
Extremely, extremely aware.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is really problematic right now, because, you know, even in his camp, Trump's facing some criticism for this. Trump just came out and announced he wants to bring in like 600,000 Chinese students.
I know.
And I mean, it's weird, because just a little bit ago, he was saying we need to get rid of the Chinese students because they're national security threats. They were talking about these foreign students acting as spies, acting as foreign agents, stealing our technology. He was going after Harvard for this. That was the big thing. And now he's saying bring in 600,000 of them. And, you know, I respect Trump, but it seems a bit contradictory. And so I think there's a lot of people wondering why. The simple reason Trump gave was this, and maybe this is based on, you know, new assessments, fair enough. He's saying that if they were to eliminate basically, you know, Chinese foreign students coming to American universities to study, that a lot of universities would go out of business. And I mean, that's concerning. I don't think they go out of business. Maybe they'd have to cut some costs or maybe redo their loan system, which I don't think would be a bad thing. But the problem you have apparently is that, you know, whereas a lot of American students and people in this country, when we go to school, we take out loans, we pay it off, you know, most of our lives, probably. When you're a foreign student, you can't do that. When you're a foreign student, you have to actually pay. The problem you have with China, though, is the ones who can pay are usually the sons and daughters of Chinese Communist Party officials. You really can't have that kind of money unless you're part of the CCP. So the people we're bringing in are not the people we necessarily want, you know, on that front. On the point you mentioned, though, what do I know about Chinese spies? So people talk about the Confucius Institutes. They talk about the little red schools. They talk about, you know, Chinese researchers stealing stuff. I'm warning about something that nobody else is talking about just yet, for the most part, which is the CSSAs, the Chinese Student and Scholar Associations. These exist in almost every major U.S. university, including even like Harvard Medical School. And the CSSAs are funded by the Chinese consulates. They're operated by the Chinese consulates. The Chinese Communist Party has a branch of its government that also focuses on these and controls these. It includes not only the students, it's students and scholars. So it's faculty members. It is college professors, Chinese. And it's also members of the Chinese front organizations within the communities. So it's basically the entire spy system of the CCP in external countries. Now, these CSSAs, they function like, you know, student groups kind of. But what they work as are programs where the CCP and Chinese agents can monitor students, control students, and direct students. So, for example, if they want to gain access to a research program, say the U.S. government funds a medical research program, or the Pentagon funds a weapons research program at a university, which we often do, the faculty can actually push, or, you know, a professor or all of them for that matter, can push one of these selected Chinese student spies into that research program. Hey, recommended by three professors and, you know, two faculty members, you know, of course they're going to let him in. They then have them research it. They bring them back to China. They steal it. The more frightening thing is what they call, quote unquote, serving in place. So aside from stealing, they also have them stay. But when they stay, what they do is they basically groom them in their careers. And if the Chinese Communist Party needs a spy, maybe in a governor's office, if they need a spy in a congressional office, if they need a spy in a think tank, if they need a spy in the FBI or the military, for that matter, they can groom their careers. Hey, go to an officer training school. Hey, go into teaching at, you know, West Point. Hey, get a job at the Department of Justice or the IRS. And once they're in these positions, they can trigger investigations. They can trigger lawsuits. They can attack or, you know, push out or even fire Americans who they believe are against the Chinese Communist Party. They can get corporate jobs and they can recommend against certain corporate policies that, again, you know, the CCP would not want. Basically, they can seed our entire system from top to bottom with spies. And if you're letting in 600,000 a year, they're not all going to be spies. But, you know, even 1,000 would be a very low estimate. And even 1,000 is a big problem.
It is. And I'll tell you something else came to mind while you were talking, and you kind of indirectly referenced it. We had the agro-terrorism incident at the University of Michigan. And that's very serious. That's not just spying. That was a direct attempt to put assault on Americans if you ingest some of what they were doing. And then, of course, you had Governor Hochul's aide and the influence she had there, not to mention the corruption. But I remember on the University of Michigan side, the primary researcher that came under suspicion had an allegiance to the CCP on her cell phone. And I'm just saying, okay, well, I can't understand why Trump would do that. You know, I don't care what universities go broke. National security should trump universities going broke.
Yeah. Well, so here's the other thing. So while you could say, well, Josh, you know, not all Chinese, I don't think he says, but look, you know, they're not all going to be spies, right? Not all Chinese students are going to become spies. Not all of them are fully sold in with it. But here's the real problem. And I think that if Trump is going to, you know, make this deal with China, 600,000 Chinese students, they need to make sure that the laws in place and the systems in place are not there basically allowing and directing spying. So Chinese national security law, in fact, one of the newer ones they've made, it makes it so that if you're a Chinese citizen, you have no choice. If the CCP asks something of you, if they want something of you, if they tell you to do something, you have no choice. It doesn't matter if you're working in the United Nations and you've taken an oath to be impartial on, you know, which nation you're serving, you have no choice. It doesn't matter if you're a Chinese professor. It doesn't matter if you're a Chinese student. If the Chinese Communist Party says we need you to apply for this job in the U.S. government so we can have a spy in the U.S. government, you have to do it. If they say steal this research project, you have to do it. If you don't do it, you're basically exiled and your family gets threatened. And they can also have all the agents at these universities turn and attack you. They can accuse you of things. They can even probably have you deported. In fact, they even have these secret Chinese police stations in the United States, for that purpose. So there's a lot they can do to you.
How many of those are you aware of, the police stations?
So there's a group called Safeguard Defenders that did the two reports that really raised the alarm on that. I would say it's actually much bigger than just that. So they raised the alarm over a handful of locations that were set up through a new program the CCP had launched, where they even had like a 911 type number you could call if you're Chinese to report, like, you know, your democracy loving Chinese neighbor, or your religious believing Chinese neighbor, if you want, and have their family attacked or have other things happen to them. It's actually bigger than that. So they work through the Tong networks, T-O-N-G. These organizations have tens of thousands of members in some areas. Some claim to have hundreds of thousands. And they're all over the place. Every major Chinese community is going to have at least a few Tongs. And the CCP uses its consulates to gain access to and then switch the allegiance of the Tongs to the Chinese Communist Party. So people are paying attention to a drop in the bucket. What has been exposed is a drop in the bucket. And I've been talking about this since 2008.
I know we're vulnerable and dependent on China for much of our medical supplies, rare earth minerals, and so forth. And realizing that deficit, if President Trump were to call you and say, Joshua, based on your research, what do you think I should do about the Chinese? What would you tell him?
The only thing we can do, well, a couple things. One, wage information war. Challenge them on the narrative front. We don't do that. In fact, we let them basically control our narratives. Even at American military universities, our military officers are being taught the Chinese Communist Party's narrative on the history of China. They're not being taught the real history. And part of that is because of the lobbying efforts and, of course, the infiltration of these Chinese, Chinese professors and Chinese faculty members. Business-wise, they basically control a lot of our businesses because we don't properly defend our businesses against Chinese influence. Even within government agencies, we do not properly defend them against Chinese influence. In fact, Congress last year did a whole report on this. In fact, bringing in the heads of 25 U.S. government agencies and asking them, what have you experienced with Chinese influence operations? What are you doing about it? The simple answer is, well, we know it's happening. And the other answer is, we basically don't do anything about it. I think Trump needs to systematically uproot Chinese Communist Party influence and spy operations from the entire U.S. government. Until that happens, nothing's going to get done properly to go against them. Then he needs to go after the private sector and make it so that any kind of influence operations, pressure campaigns, or otherwise that have silenced Hollywood, silenced the NBA, that are impacting corporate decisions, that are forcing American companies to hand over their source codes or their intellectual property and they go to China, that are victimizing them, that are controlling, for example, what information they can talk about, that are forcing them to hire Chinese agents, that are forcing American businesses to put Communist Party cells in their own businesses when they operate there. None of that should be allowed, and we're allowing it. Need to look at, do we need to decouple completely, frankly, if the problem is too big?
Well, I'm really concerned with the last thing you said. How do the Chinese get the leverage to tell a corporation you're going to allow these kinds of people in your organization?
They say it's Chinese law. And if you want to be in China, you have to abide by Chinese law.
Oh,
and
I
you
see.
Have no choice.
This is done over in China.
Yep.
Okay. I was thinking mentally, I went to the infiltration here in America, although
It could be, and it's almost just as bad.
This and how in our right minds do we allow a foreign power to maintain a police station inside the United States?
Yeah. Well, so briefly, just on them hiring people, the official stuff, the actual Communist Party cells, that's inside China. But outside China, they do the same thing. You know, Hollywood, for example, if they want to get films into China, they have to like co-produce with Chinese companies. They have, you know, they've taken over the talent houses. And so they call it advisory. Hire this Chinese advisory group on, you know, policy with China. And that's how they get their sales into American corporations here. They do it with ad networks, ad companies, even, you know, to go after media they don't like. They do it to us, you know, against us using that, which is, you know, we're actually denied a lot of ads at Epic Times because of this. But to your question, too, why do we allow it? It's bigger than even just the Chinese secret police stations. You know, I mentioned a bit of that. But I mentioned the Tongs. They also have what's called Operation Fox Hunt. They had members of the Chinese spy organization, the MSS, Ministry of State Security, like they're kind of like their FBI, openly operating in the United States, going back to even the Obama administration. MSS agents of the Chinese National Security Intelligence Agency are going around and they're threatening members of the Chinese community if they speak out. It was known even during the Obama administration, they were going after like people who were dissidents, people who'd escaped China, people who were critical of China. And they're doing this on American soil, threatening to kill them, convincing them to commit suicide, threatening their families and pressuring them. Sometimes, you know, concern is even abducting them to bring them back to China to face, you know, face justice, quote unquote. But it's not justice. It's them just using labels to go after their enemies. You know, the big narrative for this is what people are calling transnational repression. And there are groups being targeted by the Chinese Communist Party on American soil as we speak, including human rights groups, including like religious believers. The Falun Gong community is dealing with tons of this right now, of the CCP even infiltrating American policy, triggering investigations. And so on that front, not much is being done about it, with the exception of Texas. The governor in Texas actually just, I think yesterday, announced a big program pushing back against Chinese Communist Party transnational repression.
How much influence do they have with the Department of Education at the federal level?
Well, I can't say the exact amount, but I can tell you that based on the congressional report that came out last year, where again, you know, they called on the heads of 25 U.S. government agencies, they found that it's happening across the board, and they found that almost nothing is being done to stop it. And so, you know, we don't know the full extent, but what we can say is the little red schools continue, which are like the Confucius Institutes at the lower grade levels. The Confucius Institutes continue. Mm-hmm. We're so dependent on Chinese money, apparently, within our, you know, education system that they're willing to even let in 600,000 Chinese students, despite all the known threats. And the one point I would raise on that, the customer is always right. And who's the customer for the colleges? If Trump is acknowledging that we cannot eliminate, you know, Chinese students coming to our universities or the universities go out of business, then who is the customer? And yes, I would say if that's the case, if it's China, they're going to be able to direct school policy because they have enough leverage.
Yeah, it's interesting the way you're describing this, because I've had Australians tell me the same thing is going on in Australia.
Oh, it's the exact same programs.
Yeah.
I've researched some of that as well.
It just shows you the difference in mentality. Americans are worried about the next quarter, you know, and the profit report. The Chinese will play the long game, because clearly infiltration in our education system is the long game. And subverting the education of people in the service academies is the same thing. I wanted to go back and ask you a specific question. If you know, in the curriculum at the Air Force Academy and West Point and so forth, is part of the subversion of the truth, the hiding of what Mao Zedong did, this takeover, the millions that were killed, the Cultural Revolution, is that what they're leaving out?
Well, the narrative they have is the actual Chinese Communist Party narrative. So what our military officers are taught is the CCP's narrative, which is they call it the Century of Humiliation. And so the Chinese Communist Party's narrative on, okay, why did Mao Zedong kill Chinese people? Why did they have the culture? You know, why did they have all these revolutions?
Okay.
The narrative they have is this. They say China was a backwards country with backwards beliefs and all these old, you know, old ways of thinking. And that's the way the CCP explains, you know, its narrative against religion and culture. They say these backwards, you know, like feudal thinking. Confucianism and Buddhism and Taoism, the ideas that made China, they demonize it. And then they say China was invaded by most of Europe, of course, you know, which was true to an extent with the Opium Wars.
That's right.
Then they say that China had all these divisions inside, and the Chinese Communist Party, the brave CCP, you know, finally the invasion of Japan. And they say the brave CCP fought off Japan, destroyed the evil Japanese and pushed them back. And then the brave CCP fought against the rebels who were trying to stop the revolution, which was the Kuomintang, and pushed them into Taiwan, you know, which eventually we will finally win that final battle against Taiwan and eliminate the rebels. And then they say that, you know, because of the century of humiliation, that all foreign policy that criticizes the CCP is offensive to the Chinese people. It merges the identity of the CCP with the Chinese people. And then it says that we had to clean out the old thinking of China to make sure that it never again, you know, plagues us, and that the grand future that the Communist Party has created. They say there'll be no new China without the CCP. And the CCP is solely responsible for building the new China. That's the narrative of the CCP justifying the killing of, you know, depending on who you're listening to, but 50 to 70 million Chinese people under Mao Zedong, right? Yeah, it's mass starvation, the Cultural Revolution, where they destroyed all Chinese history, where they were taking Buddhist monks, killing all the abbots, and then putting Communist Party officials in charge of the, you know, in charge of the monasteries, where they were taking Buddhist monks and putting them on the front lines of the battle to clear minefields in the Korean War. A lot of false history, too. The real history is this, and this is the history not being taught. If you go back and read books from the early 1900s, and I've read them personally, I'll give you one. There's a book called Chinese Fantastics. There's a British guy who's in China, but, you know, after the fall of the last dynasty and before the CCP, who's writing about what life was like. China was already very modernized. They'd already brought in a lot of Western culture. You had cars and you had factories, and everything was actually coming up already, as was most of the world, I'll note. In the late 1800s and the cold, you know, the Industrial Revolutions and, you know, early 1900s, most of the world was going through a very similar transformation. South Korea, great example of that. They went from being a feudal society to one of the top economies in the world and a very modern society. And they did that without communism. In fact, you can look at what communism did if you look at North Korea. Same thing with Taiwan, not a communist society. They built a very good modern system, and they're one of the top economies in the world. Same with Japan, you know, if you want to play that, even from the 1940s up until now. So the CCP is trying to take credit for something it didn't do. The other side also is that the actual changes in China were not brought by the Chinese Communist Party. They were brought by Western influence, Western business, Western manufacturing, and Western investment. All the building up of China was post-reform and opening up, really like after the 80s. Before that, they were still backwards, feudal society living under communist dictatorship. It was when they opened up to Western business and America really built all the new industry in China. It was America made, ironically. And then also the narrative they have of having to destroy old traditions and old beliefs. The CCP destroyed the identity of the Chinese people and tried replacing it. Taiwan is one of the biggest ideological thorns in their side, because those are people who held on to the old Chinese culture for the most part, and they built a very successful economy and a very good country. So, you know, it contradicts the whole narrative. The other narrative, of course, the CCP fought off the Japanese and stuff. It wasn't the CCP fighting the Japanese. Most of the fighting, the overwhelming majority, was the Kuomintang, the KMT, currently, you know, which became Taiwan. The CCP, they'd actually sit out the battles. They only fought in two minor battles in the entire, you know, battle of World War II in China. They did almost nothing. And unfortunately, when the U.S. rolled in, we say, okay, bring peace. Nobody shoot each other. The Kuomintang could have destroyed the CCP. Unfortunately, and this is a black spot in our history, we stopped that from happening, which allowed the CCP to regroup and then fight against the KMT when the KMT was in a weakened state. Which then pushed them to Taiwan, you know, the island of Formosa. So, you know, but our troops are not being taught this. Our officers are only being taught the first half of that story. They're not being taught the second half of that story.
I am baffled about how they could penetrate service academy curriculum. And I know what you're saying is true because I've heard it. I've heard of other subversions like Air Force Academy. They have witchcraft cults,
Well, let
and
me tell you something.
it's
Let me tell you
crazy.
something. I've been invited twice to speak at the Air Academy, the Air Force Air Academy. The first time I talked about Chinese history, the second time I talked about communist history and socialism and stuff. The professor who invited me got punished for speaking about that. And so I don't know the exact context of it, but I know I was never invited back again. And the professor who invited me was punished.
That is absolutely insane. People are criticizing Trump and Hegseth for the tremendous turnover in personnel at the Pentagon. How much of that do you think is tied to what we're talking about? They're trying to root out communist Chinese influence.
I would imagine part of it is, I wouldn't think it's absolute. I do think some of it is ideological because, the military, people can accuse Trump of purging, generals or whatever based on ideology. Do you support me? Do you oppose me? The military has different rules than the civilian population. The president of the United States is the commander in chief, and you're not allowed to criticize the commander in chief. You can actually get court-martialed for that. You're not allowed to challenge the directives of the commander in chief. And so if you have insubordination within the leadership of the military, they are allowed to kick you out. On the other side of the aisle, Obama did a lot of that,
Oh,
frankly.
yeah.
And so, you could argue that he was doing it for ideological reasons too. But I think I do think part of it would be foreign influence. I think a big part of it is just insubordination, personally.
The polls that are coming out on graduating American students, a disturbing trend I'm seeing is that about a third of them think socialism is a good idea. And I imagine it varies in intensity from person to person, but when you have that many people graduating and the polls are reflecting that, I know it's going to be in part the media, but also too, are the communists turning the knob on this too?
I think they have been. I think they've been doing it for a very long time. And I think the CCP is not the sole force behind that. I think the problem we had is this. It's a snowball. The snowball on the infiltration of our universities and schools has been building since the hippie movement of the 1960s.
That's true.
Because what happened was this. The reason you could be excommunicated if you were a communist during the Cold War was because if you were a communist, you were a card-carrying communist, which meant that you actually like registered for it, and it meant also that you were your loyalty was to the Soviet Union, right? They were the leaders of the World Communist Revolution, and so you actually had foreign allegiance if you were a Communist Party member. The Soviets, though, they were doing a lot of infiltration campaigns, active measures and that kind of stuff, ideological subversion. They're going after universities. They were rallying up the students. They were starting protests. A lot of the anti-war movement was, they're doing. And a lot of the communist groups and the radical hippies and stuff like that who were on that side of the spectrum, what did they do? Well, they went into government and they went into teaching. They went into the universities. A great example of that is Columbia University and the School of Marxist Studies, also known as the Frankfurt School, which started a lot of the cultural Marxism programs in the United States. Even members of the Weather Underground went on
Yes.
to get professor positions, which is insane. They should be sitting in a solitary confinement cell at Guantanamo Bay, not teaching our universities, in my opinion.
Well, they've been directly involved in our politics. I mean, their
They have.
leaders helped to install Barack Obama. They held a party for him to put him in the state house. And it was something that Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Maricopa County, where I live, uncovered when he was fighting back against Obama's persecution of his office. And they had some pretty good firsthand testimony about this. And so, yeah, I'm real familiar with what you're talking about there. It's frightening it goes that far. And I can't believe Trump isn't taking a McCarthy kind of view that there's one behind every bush and that we need to get him out of the country. I mean, I can't believe loyalty to the universities is a reason why. You know what I suspect? is there's a trade deal that supersedes this that's coming, and this was one of the agreements.
You know, that is one of my bigger concerns. And, you know, I know people might say, well, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And I know people might say, well, you know, we'll engage with them, you know, capitalism versus communism, may the free market win. The problem is we've tried that. And what we found is that, no, capitalism has not made them less communistic. The open door policies, we've let them create policies to make us less capitalistic and more communistic. The open door policies have allowed them to extend state control to an extent over American businesses. And what is socialism? Socialism, in the admission of Vladimir Lenin himself, was the state capitalist monopoly, as he called it, state capitalism. The Communist Party of China calls itself a state capitalist regime. What is state capitalism? It's the fancy way of saying socialism, and it's the fancy way of saying that the Communist Party controls the systems of capitalism. The communism does not get rid of factories. Communism does not get rid of businesses. All it does is extends government control over the businesses and factories. And by opening up to China and exposing our companies to Chinese law, we've allowed them to control our businesses.
Exactly.
We are living under a state capitalist monopoly controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And a big part of that is, you know, the whole trade engagement we've done, thinking we're going to make the whole world more free when it's making us less free.
I just wonder what their end game is, though. I mean, I've read some inflammatory documents, and I don't know how realistic they are, that they say they want to occupy America for the natural resources and they don't want the Americans here, which to me would mean genocide. Is that their end game, or is it just slow erosion of America, where America can be dominated by us and we don't have to do much and we can exploit them that way?
The end game is they don't believe the Chinese Communist Party can coexist in the same world as the United States. And that could be America stops being America. It could be that we become a communist country through subversion. It could be that businesses are given a seat at the table of government, which is, you know, when you talk to these globalist organizations, they talk about multi-stakeholder capitalism. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Multi-stakeholder capitalism is the model where NGOs, corporations, activists, and, you know, third-party organizations and quote-unquote community leaders and investors are able to have a seat at government. It's not just the elected officials making the calls. And that is the big agenda on the global stage with the communists. In other words, and if they can control through subversion the businesses, the investors, and, you know, the grassroots organizations, most of which they already influence to a good degree, they control your government. They don't have to invade. They don't have to take you over. They take you over through the open system. And exactly. we're already very well on our way towards that. The other side is, yeah, it is. It is. And it's a lot more devious because most people wouldn't even notice it. Most people would, it's like, it's a slow boiling of the frog, and you'd wake up in a tyrannical country where you think you're free and you know there's a constitution, but none of it's being implemented because the businesses and corporations controlled by foreign influence have a seat at the table of government. I mean, and look at cancel culture. Doesn't that violate the constitution and free speech? Look at debanking. Doesn't that violate the constitution and free speech? Look at foreign governments suing American corporations for allowing free speech on the internet. Does that not violate the constitution? We're already allowing it to happen. We're already there. The other side is they want to have what's called the multipolar world order. The narrative, and this is a United Nations program. This is a Soviet. This is a Russian program. It's a Chinese Communist Party program. It's a fancy way of saying they want to have the United. They want to overthrow the United States as the world leader. So their narrative is we currently live under the unipolar world order. America is the leader of the free world, the unipolar, you know, one leader of the free world, the United States. They want to have the multipolar world order, which is regional control. China controls East Asia. Russia controls the old Soviet bloc. The European Union controls Western Europe, you know, Middle East and Africa controlled by various powers, Latin America controlled by various powers, and then Canada controlling itself and America controlling itself. And America is one tiny voice at the table. The idea is it's based on a Maoist strategy called surround the city with the countryside. A king is not a king if you take away his subjects. America is not the world leader if America leads nobody. And so what they're trying to do is create this kind of multi-seat, you know, table. And there's, you know, the United, there's all kinds of groups working on this at the global level. But the more nefarious side would be the actual genocide of the American people. And then that's where things like biological warfare come into play, which, you know, they have programs for as well.
Interesting you'd mention that. I've had some high-level retired military tell me that's their biggest fear with regard to China. There was a show, and I want to translate this into China. It was on USA Network. It was called The Americans, and it was about Russian infiltrators, well-trained. And then they had their children coming up, and they didn't go through the entire progression of the show with this. But their children will one day serve the state, be total American citizens, untraceable, and they could assume positions in the State Department or the Pentagon or critical infrastructure. And that was actually laid out in the show as a plan. And Russian defectors pretty much say that was what we were doing. Do the Chinese have something similar? Is there a generational plan for takeover as well?
Yes, and it's far greater than what the Soviets are doing. Much, much greater. You know, the Soviets were doing more official spy programs. They were doing it so, you know, you're part of the KGB, you're trained, you had a hand, you know, that TV show you mentioned, I watched it, it was a good show, actually. You know, more official Soviet agents. The Chinese Communist Party does it to everybody. I mentioned the CSSAs. The CSSAs, if you're a Chinese student, you don't have a choice. If you're a Chinese student, Chinese law requires you to act as an agent. You have no choice. It's in their national security law. Every one of them is directed to be the equivalent of a KGB agent. Or you're a dissident and you're targeted by the CCP and they threaten you and your family. And I know a lot of people who deal with that as well. I know a lot of Chinese dissidents who deal with that, and there's nothing done on our side to stop it. The American government does nothing, nothing to protect them. It's terrifying. I shouldn't say that. They have arrested a handful of Chinese spies, but for the most part, it's allowed to continue, for the most part. But the concerning thing is all of them are regarded as spies by Chinese law. The other side is if the CSSAs at American universities, they're allowed to continue as we speak, they automatically enroll every Chinese student. They don't have a choice. If you come to America, they automatically enroll you in the CSSA. You are part of it, whether you like it or not. And they also have a branch of their government that monitors them and also monitors their family. It's called the OCAO, the Overseas Chinese Affairs Office. And they don't even regard first-generation Chinese as part of it. They have databases on second-generation Chinese and even third-generation Chinese. So you can have somebody, you know, their grandma came from China, right? Their mom's an American citizen, born and raised here, and they're born and raised here. But their grandma came from China, and they are on the CCP's database as somebody under the CCP system. And so they use all of them. They will target all of them, and they do it openly. This isn't even a secret, which is the scary part.
I'm trying to think how to formulate this question. Going back to the work of Trevor Loudon.
Trevor, he's great.
And if you go back over a decade, he listed people who were in Congress and the Senate as being affiliated or direct members of the Democratic Socialists, which is tied to the Communist Party. And they have very much communist ideals. Here I'm in Arizona. The late Raul Grijalva was probably the best example of that. He was more like Fidel Castro than an American politician. But here's what I am wondering as a result. And the Communist Manifesto basically talks about workers of the world unite, communists unite across the planet. Is that mentality in effect? Is this tying in the radical elements of the Democratic Party to the CCP movement in our country?
Unfortunately, yes. I think the Democrat Party is trying to resist this. I think what's happening with the Democratic Party right now, the stigma around socialism has been removed. And so Whereas a lot of politicians in the past would not call themselves socialists, right? They even when Obama was still president in his early years, it was still controversial. The controversy of that went away around his second term in office.
Yes.
So they used to call them. I'm not a socialist. I'm a democratic socialist. I'm not a socialist. I just believe in equality. things like that. Now you ask them, and they're like, "Yeah, of course I am." And this is why you have people openly running under the DSA ticket. It's not controversial anymore. The problem the Democrats had is that a lot of their grassroots, the groups that have been funded, they're part of that whole diaspora. They're part of the whole socialist and even revolutionary communist movement. They need them for grassroots. And so DSA, they got their foot into the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders is one of the biggest voices on it. But then you have the squad, AOC and, Rashida Tlaib and, the others, right? They're openly DSA. They don't hide it. And what the Democrat Party is dealing with now is the socialists are trying to take over the party. Technically, they're a third party, but they're trying to take over the entire party. The No Oligarchs tour that AOC and Bernie Sanders are doing right now, I think, represents that. They're trying to make AOC, I think, the next presidential candidate. And there are a lot of members of the Democrat Party who really don't like that. Nancy Pelosi, for example, she's been very vocal about it. She doesn't like it, as have a lot of them, because they're concerned that there's a very small fringe, maybe 10% of the party that does not represent the whole party, that wants control of the entire thing. And they risk being transformed from within. The mayoral election in New York is kind of a case study with that, with Mondami, where he won the popular vote among Democrats, and then you have now Mayor Adams and Cuomo now challenging him on third party tickets. The actual Democrats are trying to challenge the Democratic Socialist who was able to run on the Democratic ticket, because they're worried that he's subverted their party, and that's where they're at, basically.
Yeah, I wonder if New Yorkers consider 911. There's an armed man trying to break into my place. Oh, we'll send two social workers over right away.
Have you tried? Have you tried giving him what he wants? have you tried?
There you go.
Tried giving him therapy. Yeah,
that's the California model. Yeah, very much. This is crazy. Well, this has really been informative, and I'll tell you, a lot of my audience is going to find it disturbing. People, I'm going to tell you, when Joshua, and we don't have time to get into it now, but was talking about business having a seat at the table and the communist influence, that was the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Trump did away with when he became president. They've already been down that road, so this is not speculation. Joshua, I want to thank you for coming on. Your show is Crossroads. Anything you'd like to add about how to follow you before we leave?
So I'm on YouTube. That's right. Also on the Epoch Times. You can look at Crossroads with Joshua Phillip. And I do the show 4 days a week. So yeah, come check it out.
That sounds really good. Well, Epoch Times, leader in our fight to maintain who we are, people. And I suggest you support them as well. Joshua, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
As we race towards the final quarter of 2025, physically speaking, the Europeans are taking some definitive actions, and I mean definitive, and it's going to alter the landscape even if we do nothing. We're going to be forced to do something. I think there's no question about it, and it's barely getting reported, yet you can pick up publications in Europe and read about it. I don't even know that the masses there are totally aware of this, but this is, to date, the most significant move in global financial movement that we have seen. We're going to tell you all about it right here on the Common Sense Show. Hey, if you've not signed up for our newsletter, you really should. It's one-stop shopping for the multiple releases we do every single day, and they can come to your email box once a day, all there. A recapitulation of everything we've done in the past 24 hours. Best of all, it's free. Also, over 50,000 people are taking advantage of this. All you got to do is go to thecommonsenseshow.com, click on the newsletter link in the upper right-hand corner, put your email in. No, we don't sell your data, and you'll get yours every single day from here on out. It's a great deal. Take advantage of it. And like I said, it's free. Well, we're brought to you by My Digital Money. And I will tell you, I'm growing more convinced that crypto needs to be in your portfolio. Not the only part, not necessarily the biggest part, but it needs to be in your portfolio because Trump is pushing this and now I get it. Now, I don't like stablecoin because of its potential for abuse under the wrong leadership. I don't fear that with Trump. What Trump is going to do is set up for where crypto goes up. You now move that money not into dollars, but you have to back stablecoin up with dollars and you move it into dollars, the crypto money. And this gives backing for the dollar. This is the antithesis of what we're going to report on what's going on in Europe. They're doing just the opposite. They're jumping ship. Trump is staying in the ship and he's bailing out the water. And he's bailing it out, I believe, faster than it's coming in. And what we're looking at right now is that crypto, make money, move it into stablecoin that has to be backed by the dollar. And you've got a winning formula to make the dollar, again, the world's reserve currency. And the reason I say that is because the strength is going to be there. The treasuries are going to go up in value. Foreign investors and foreign governments are going to buy. And that's just going to make us have better economic conditions, and our spending because of newfound wealth will outpace inflation. There's so many good things that could happen out of this, but I will warn you, when we get 4 years of J.D. Vance and then we've had 12 years, or excuse me, yeah, 12 years of good leadership, hopefully Marco Rubio's in the wings, right? Then you have 20 years. You got a generation of good leadership. I don't fear these people trying to enslave our finances and us as a result with CBDC. But stablecoin could very easily turn into CBDC, especially with all the data gathering that Palantir's doing. That sets up the social credit that makes that system work. That's my hesitation with stablecoins. But whether I hesitate or not, this is moving forward. So right now, do in Rome what the Romans do. Okay. Now, having said that, where am I going to go for my crypto? Well, to people I know and trust, My Digital Money. You know, we have their CEO on about once a month to give us updates on the market, and we blend back into crypto because it's figuring prominently right now. And all you got to do to become part of this is go to MyDigitalMoney.com. That's MyDigitalMoney.com. And final thought, we're going to come back here in the next segment and we're going to hit up a story that is scary out of Europe. And if Trump wasn't doing what he was doing with positioning to revalue gold, I don't care what they say, they're going to do it. And if Trump wasn't doing the crypto to stablecoin backed by the dollar plan, I'd be extremely frightened because Europe's move could bring down the global economy. But I do think this will insulate us to a great deal what we're talking about. And what am I talking about, the Europeans? You're going to have to come back in the next segment. Stay tuned. There's more. By the way, if you've not checked out our TV show, we're getting ready to do a dump tonight, the first dump of the month. Lots of stories, and people love our Hiding in Plain Sight series. People say, Dave, kind of reminds me of the old Art Bell days prior to censorship. And I think that's a fair comparison, although I don't claim it's identical. I have my interest in identity. Art had his. Art had the best show in the history of radio, in my humble opinion. So I'm honored by the comparison. Thank you. But we hit a lot of that. Plus, we have our geopolitics and we have our interviews up there. TheCommonSenseShow.tv is where you want to go. Hey, thanks for joining us. We'll see you back here again next time.